First on Radio 4, here's Andrew Marr to start the week.
Hello. Well, today we're going to be talking about faith, good people, and the terrible things they sometimes achieve. Miri Rubin's written a major new study of the Virgin Mary, looking at how her story was used to whip up hostility to Jews and how it changed dramatically over the centuries. Penny Wilcox directed John Adams' new opera, Dr. Atomic, which tells the story of Robert Oppenheimer, father of the atomic bomb, and his colleagues at Los Alamos. And the great Israeli novelist Amos Oz, who's written so eloquently about the Palestinian tragedy and Israeli history, is here to talk about his new book. First, though, one of the most radical and provocative books of the year so far, I reckon, written by former MI6 officer Alistair Crook. In Resistance, he urges us to sympathise with the struggles of Hamas, Hezbollah and other Islamist groups, but he gets a lot further, accusing Western civilization of having badly lost its way, leaving people isolated, bereft and endangered. It's time, he says, to listen to the message of the Muslim world. Alistair, you call this book The Essence of the Islamist Revolution, and you say that it's a conflict about the essence of man, really, between civilizations.
Yes, that's exactly right. What I've tried to do is to outline a new way of looking at what the Islamist revolution and to try and get to the heart of what it is. And it isn't simply about violence or a whimsical reaction to modernity. It is essentially about a new way not only of looking at Islam, but more importantly looking at politics and looking at the way human beings are. The way we see ourselves, standing back and finding a new way of looking and seeing ourselves and the new way of seeing our existence and our reality around us. And that, for many Muslims, has been a very liberating experience. It's been allowing them to think differently, to use other means of transforming themselves, if you like, from one level of reality and looking at it to another subjective level of reality.
You go back to the beginnings of the Enlightenment, really, in your critique of what's happened in the West. And the argument used by a lot of Islamists, which you clearly share, is that it took Western mankind on a materialistic, atomized, over-individualistic journey, and we lost connection with something, and that now we've created an overly materialistic and overly individualistic world.
Yes, and I'm not saying this thinking or these ideas are simply exclusive to Islam. In fact, what I'm also saying is what is so interesting is that you have this whole theme in Western philosophy, and interestingly, more importantly, in some aspects, not so much of religion, but in psychology, in depth psychology, in archetypal psychology, which are trying to put the human being together again and talking about the psyche or the soul as the element that needs to be recomposed from the segmented, divided, compartmentalized, alienated version of the human being. And that has resonance with the traditional Islamic thinking about this, which is now undergoing a revival. It's not the same thinking, because one has taken place in a secular context and the other one in Islamic, but it was already in Islam. And this is what is coming out. And it is this thinking that they have been struggling with, which perhaps might have message for the West
and
in due course.
What you're saying is listen to them and take them seriously. And there's certainly lots of quotations and interviews here from mullahs and people from inside Hamas and Hezbollah, which are not the kind of things that most people associate with these people. You will, however, probably already have been accused of putting too easily to one side what these organisations would say about the position of women, about homosexuals, about lots of liberal freedoms that we take for granted outside that world, that perhaps it's if we have seen them too one-sidedly in a negative way, you're seeing, you know, you've pushed too much of the dark side away.
Well, I make my apologies for having brought it out, because I think there's so much of the negative side. That actually it's important to say something, because I don't think many people have even heard or aware that there is another side. And of course, what you say is absolutely right. I mean, there is not just a revolution of philosophers. There is a part that is dangerous and ugly. And that is part of, if you like, the counter-revolution. It's not all revolution and rationalism. There is an element that has been deeply involved in literalism and dogmatism, and that is also a part, and that's the part we tend to associate with Islamist radicals. But that is largely something, in fact, the West has created itself.
And what you find attractive, what you like, is a sense of belonging, a sense of community, a sense of fairness.
No, I think it's even more important. This is a radical inversion of politics. It's really going back to politics. Our politics has always been the politics of the market and the liberal market. And if you like, subordinating other community and social aspects to market liberalization. This was our great transformation. The Social Democrats tried to, if you like, mitigate these aspects. And what the Islamists are doing are saying, no, we need a society that is based on compassion, on equity and justice, and we must subordinate other aspects, including the market. It can be there, but it must be subordinated to having a society in which people act and behave to each other in this way.
In front of, rather than behind, these more sophisticated and appealing arguments, there is violence, and there is a kind of history of extreme violence. How do you deal with that?
Well, that's right. I think what we are, and what I would say is that Islamism is on a beginning course. It's part of a process of coming out of the violence. But the same thing happened in Christianity, and I'm sure some of the other speakers will mention, when Christianity came out of the Dark Ages, part of its refinding itself, of rediscovering itself, was about a much more violent approach and a much more aggressive approach to finding itself. And what's happening in the revolution is not finished. I mean, it's clearly a process. It's evolving. There are many mistakes. There are many things. And the revolutionaries, if you speak to the revolutionaries in Iran, they would be the first to say, this isn't the finished article. We have to go on and we have to make it much better.
In your previous life, you spent a lot of time crisscrossing the region for various purposes. Was there a sort of moment of revelation? Was it a sort of slow process that you thought, actually, these people are more interesting than we in the West give them credit for? We should be listening to them harder? How did your interest start?
Well, I suppose it was because I was talking to the movements. I mean, all of them from 20 years ago, when many of these movements we see today were in their formation. And it has been the process of listening and being really astonished by the difference between what they say and actually how this is seen and presented and understood in the West.
Miriam Rubin.
Yes, it's an extremely rich book, and I too, coming to it, I wasn't sure what to find in it. I particularly thought you were strong in showing how those communities, how the leaders, Islamist leaders say in Gaza, took sense of despair and trauma and lack of identity and mobilized it and said, even the poorest of the poor can do something. You can give charity, you can help, and so on. I see all that operating. And actually, it reminded me of Western movements, say the trade union movement, or as you mentioned in your book, indeed, the civil rights movements in America, where activists go to the very people they're trying to recruit and mobilize and share. Now, what I wasn't sure about was, how does this new vision of man sit besides the desires of large people in the world, Western world, Europe, Latin America, the United States, and other parts of Asia and Africa too, to have a conversation, perhaps to have a better conversation with Islamists, as some moments in your book, it's a clash of civilizations, literally, where we should say our moment is over. Let's listen to these guys, because they have the solutions not only to their own pains and ills and sufferings, but to our own as well.
I don't think it's a clash of civilizations, and I think that's very clear, because many of the Islamists believe that Western thinkers and philosophers, most of them stand above all this, are in a different category, and that they're common to all humanity, and that we must respect all of them. And what I think we're seeing is not so much a clash of civilizations, because, as I say, much of these thoughts, in perhaps a different way, different vein, are already in Western society, in philosophers from whatever it is, from Nietzsche and Heidegger onwards, and Marx as well, but in a different vein. So it's not just the West versus, because these ideas are already in the society. Mm-hmm. And what we are talking about really is perhaps a fading of one narrative and another narrative trying to refind itself, express itself in a new way.
Amosos, you're up against Hamas in a rather more direct way, a lot of the time.
Yes, but I was greatly inspired by what Alistair writes, because I think the real clash is not between civilizations, it's between fanatics and the rest of us. And fanatics exist both in the West and among the Islamists. In fact, the neocons in America are guilty of a very similar sin as the Islamists, wanting to save the other's soul by force, wanting to force the other to change, which is the syndrome of fanaticism. A fanatic is a great altruist. He's always round your neck trying to save your soul for you and to change you and rescue you, cure you from your smoking habits or voting habits or praying habits. Now, I think Alistair opens our eyes to a very important phenomenon, which is the fact that beyond the Islamist anger and rage, there is a certain sensibility, universalist sensibility, not just local sensibility. But I wanted to ask you, Alistair, do you believe there is any chance of a dialogue between, direct dialogue, between Israel and Iran, Israel and Hamas and Hezbollah, and what would be the premises for such a dialogue?
Oh, I think so. I'm sure there is. But what is necessary, I think, is people to be open to thinking about that dialogue. What has been so striking to us is when we brought people to talk to such movements, how difficult it is for people in the West to put aside their baggage and put aside their thinking, their way of looking at the world, and to actually hear. I always thought that one's looking and the way of seeing was very much conditioned by our mental inheritance. But it's also clear to me that the way we hear is also very much affected by our preconceptions and our ideas too. So I think one has to do that process, and then it's possible to hear. Mm-hmm. But simply to go and say, this is what we want, this is what you've got to do, is not a conversation.
Penny Walker.
I wondered whether it wasn't a slightly romantic view of Islam, that in the West we're all individualistic and decadent and they're all living in this lovely sort of sharing ummah, and that certainly in Iran, from what I understand, you know, when people go into their private spaces, the niqabs and the hijabs come off and the alcohol and the drugs, you know, and there's quite a great deal of hedonism, and that really that people are living in a much more liminal space in which identities are not really, you know, fixed in a little bit the way I felt you were perhaps over-arguing.
No, I don't think it's that so much, but there really is a real struggle going on within Islam. Islam has its literalists, its dogmatic, narrow, anti-heterodox groups. Like many societies, have had the struggle between reason and those who want literal following of every word. And there is the struggle going on, and some of it takes a really dangerous and nasty aspect.
And in that dangerous and nasty aspect, you would talk to people who are carrying on killing people.
I think, do you mean if I think it's morally right to talk to people who are killing
yes.
people? Well, of course, because I think that societies and groups are, I mean, we're all involved in this. The question is, how do we move beyond this, and how do we begin politics again? How do you restart conversations in this process?
We've killed far more Muslims than they've killed us over the last few years.